You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, April 18th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about some of our favorite vampire movies. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, Abigail is coming out tomorrow, and the trailers for that film have made it very clear that it's a movie about vampires, or at least a vampire. So I thought it would be cool for us to just talk a little bit about the vampire subgenre and try to count down some of our favorite vampire movies. So I want to open with this question. Is the subgenre of vampire films one that speaks to you personally?
Yeah, I like vampire movies. I've always had a fondness for horror. Horror has always been like one of my favorite genres. When I was a kid, the old Universal horror movies were what I sort of got started with. And I always loved the, you know, Dracula. And I don't know, I just love Dracula as a character. He's such a cool character. And he's so flexible. You can put Dracula in almost anything. You can go to the Old West. He can go to space. He can go anywhere. And he's still Dracula.
Yeah, that's true. I never really thought about that. I guess the other question I have is, what do you think is so attractive about vampire movies that causes Hollywood to keep coming back to it? Because, you know, sometimes Hollywood will go through cycles, right? Of like, I mean, the most famous example probably is Westerns, where like Westerns was like the thing. And then everybody's obviously said over the past several years that like superhero movies is like the thing for a while. And Hollywood kind of like gets obsessed with a thing and then eventually cycles through and moves on. And like, I guess maybe there have been peaks and valleys of vampire films along the way, but it just feels like something that I guess ironically refuses to die. Like there's just so much potential in that subgenre that Hollywood just keeps coming back to it. I wonder what it is about it that you think studios find so attractive.
You know, vampires, they're seductive, they're kind of sexy in a way. They can also be monstrous, you know. I do think it's that flexibility, in that you have the basic idea of a vampire, which I feel like everyone knows through osmosis. Like, even if you've never, if you've somehow gone your entire life without seeing a vampire movie, you know the basics about vampires. And I feel like that is very appealing to Hollywood, because they can plug that into different formulas and play around with it. And it's sort of like, you know, for lack of a better term, it's like ready-made IP, if you will. And Hollywood loves IP. They love intellectual property. They love things that people already know about. And I feel like that is really the secret to why the vampire genre will never really die. It'll just keep coming back in different forms.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's a great answer. So, all right, let's get into this. You mentioned that you grew up, you know, loving horror movies. Vampire movies have never really been my thing. Horror was never really my thing. I've gotten more into the genre in recent years, but I didn't really grow up with like a ton of vampire films in my rotation or anything. So I'm curious how our lists are going to play out here. But why don't you give me, I guess, your number five slot, and we'll try to count up, I guess. So your number five vampire film.
So right off the bat, I'm cheating here, because my favorite, I think of this as a vampire film, even though it's not really a vampire film. And it's Abel Ferrara's King of New York, starring Christopher Walken. Have you ever seen this?
I've never seen this, no.
Oh my God, it's such a good movie. So like I said, this is not really a vampire movie, but it feels like a vampire movie. It feels like the movie is about Christopher Walken's character is this crime kingpin, this drug lord who gets released from prison after many years and comes home and takes back over his turf. And it just feels like a vampire movie, in the way that he sort of like infects everyone around him. And, you know, the drugs he deals get people hooked in a way that you can look at it as sort of vampirism. And Christopher Walken has that sort of vampire thing to him in general, especially in this movie. And the whole movie is not the whole movie, but the majority of the movie is set at like night. And it just has this really vampire vibe to it. And I've always thought of this as like the best vampire movie ever made that's not really a vampire movie. So I'm cheating right off the bat here, but I can do that because I can do whatever the hell I want. That's what I think.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. And I think I remember like seeing the cover for this in Blockbuster when I was a kid, but I never got around to watching this movie. And now that you describe it this way, it seems like something I should move to the top of my queue then. So King of New York. Okay, that's great. I'm going to put a movie on here that I've never actually seen. I don't think. I mean, maybe I've seen parts of it, but I just love the premise so much that I have to shout it out. And I wonder if you've seen this movie, 30 Days of Night.
Yeah.
Okay. So David Slade directed this from 2007. And like the premise is it's a vampire film that takes place in Alaska, where essentially very similar to True Detective Night Country, they as happens in Alaska, essentially there's like a 30-day long polar night, I think is what it's called. And so that's obviously like a great playground for vampires to come out and do their thing. So I was just like, so I remember being so enamored by that premise. And I heard the movie was not actually great. But what did you think about the film, Chris? You saw this one.
I like parts. I love the concept. The concept is great. I love how like violent it is. It's a really violent movie. I do feel like they sort of waste the premise a little bit. Like I feel like it could have been done better, but I love the idea. It's such a perfect idea that I know it's based on the comic. Like, it's just amazing that it took so long for someone to like come up with this concept, because it's such a cool idea, and I feel like you can do so much with it.
Yeah, for sure. I want to. Hi, cat.
That's my cat. Yeah.
So I want to give like a real number five answer of a movie that I actually have seen, which is Fright Night. And I know there are two versions of Fright Night, and I feel like the version from, I think it's 2011, actually has like a decent reputation. But I think the 1980s one is the one that really stuck with me. I've only seen the movie like once or twice, but I remember really enjoying this. Is this one that you grew up with or anything?
Yeah, I definitely dig Fright Night. It's another fun, like, it's almost like a comedy, but it's not really a comedy. It's funny, but it's not really a comedy. It's like sort of tongue in cheek, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's basically about this kid who moves into, I think, a new... He either moves in or there's a new neighbor. And
yeah, he gets thinks a new neighbor.
Yeah, he thinks the neighbor is a vampire and nobody really believes him. And yeah, things go on from there. So it's a really fun movie. I would definitely recommend checking that one out. Okay, so your number four, Chris.
My number four is a film that I feel like is really underseen. It is Shadow of a Vampire from the year 2000. This is a movie. It stars John Malkovich and Willem Dafoe. And it's a fictional version of the making of F.W. Murnau's Nosferatu. And the hook of the movie is that the guy who played Nosferatu, the actor's name was Max Schreck, and he's played by Willem Dafoe in the movie. The hook of the movie is that he was actually a real vampire that F.W. Murnau discovered and decided to make a vampire movie about using a real vampire as his main vampire. And he keeps drinking the blood of everyone on the cast and crew and ruining the movie as they go along. So it sounds like a comedy, but it's played completely like straight in a very like serious sort of way, which makes it kind of even funnier. But this movie, I don't know if I know people that know about this movie, but I feel like it's not as like seen as it should be.
That's another one with an incredible premise, and I've never seen that. And I remember seeing the trailers for it and being like, wow, this looks a lot like Nosferatu. Like I remember them doing a really good job at capturing, you know, the character design and like the prosthetics and makeup and stuff. And then also like the set design and things. So
yeah.
Where do you stand on that original Nosferatu? Cause that's not going to be on any of our lists. And I know that like Robert Eggers is remaking it very soon. So what are your thoughts on that original movie, which is kind of like the urtext for the modern vampire film?
Oh, it's great. It's a classic for a reason. It's definitely stood up for a reason. You know, it's dated in the sense that it was made in what, 1919 or something like that.
Yeah, 1922 maybe.
Yeah. So you know, it's dated in some ways, but it's still, and some of the like, it's weird to call it dialogue because it's like titles, but it's some of that like is hokey, but you can't beat that vampire. You can't beat Max Schreck as Count Orlok. He just looks so cool. He's just such a great, especially for that the time the movie was made, it's just an incredible like character design for that vampire. It just mm-hmm. looks like a rodent. He's got like kind of like a rat like look to him, and that's so different than like the modern vampire, who is so like sleek and seductive and sexy, and like that's a complete opposite, which is like really more in line with Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like Dracula, we think of Dracula as like being like seductive and handsome because of like Bela Lugosi and Christopher Lee and the actors who played him. But in the book, Dracula is like he's an old man who is a monster basically, and
yeah.
The movies are what turned him into a seductive figure. So it's just interesting to see how the character has transformed over the years.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, my number four is Dr. Sleep, which is a movie that I wouldn't really characterize this as a vampire film, but once again, the concept of the True Knot, the psychic vampire cult, which is led by Rose the Hat, played by Rebecca Ferguson, is just like such a cool idea that I had to give it some props and include it on this list. So, this movie just came out like relatively recently. It came out in 2019. This is Mike Flanagan's film. It's the sequel, famously, to The Shining. And I feel like we talked about this movie so much when it came out that I don't need to do like a big rundown of it or anything. But just, the idea of a group of vampires who don't necessarily go around sucking people's blood, but like who suck the energy and sort of the psychic essence out of people. That speaks to that flexibility you were talking about earlier. It's just like such a cool idea for putting a slight twist on what we think of as that sort of classic vampire archetype. What do you think about the vampire aspect of Dr. Sleep, Chris?
It works really well in the movie. You know, I read the book before the movie came out, and every scene with the True Knot in the book, I hated. I was like, boy, I don't like these characters. This sucks. I'm not looking forward to this movie. And it's a testament to both Mike Flanagan and Rebecca Ferguson that they made it work so well in the movie, because I was enamored with that character in the film. But in the book, I was like, I don't care about this character at all. So hats off to you, Mike Flanagan, for pulling that off. You're very good at your job.
Rose the hats off Rose, to you. Yes,
yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's see. Whose turn is it now? You're number three, I think.
My number three is Near Dark, which is a Catherine Bigelow movie from the 90s. It's about like a group of nomadic vampires who travel around. It's almost like a Western. Actually, this is from 1987. I said the 90s. I'm wrong. 1987 is from. It's got a great cast. Bill Paxton is in it. Lance Henriksen is in it. And it's violent and funny and dark and kind of sexy. It's just a great little like neo horror Western noir vampire movie.
Paxton is absolutely out of his mind in this movie. He's so good. It's incredible. I just watched this for the first time like a couple years ago. I talked about it on the podcast back then. Try to go back and search for that, because I'm sure we had a deeper discussion about it there. But yeah, this is a great pick. This absolutely would have been on my list if it wasn't on yours. So I'm glad we have some representation for Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark here. My number three is What We Do in the Shadows, Taika Waititi's comedy, which I don't know if you recall me saying on a previous episode of the podcast, Chris, I watched this movie for the first time on a plane and just like, I don't know, I wasn't in the mood. Maybe it was like a terrible travel day or something. And I just like did not think this was funny at all. And then I watched the show and fell in love with the show and then went back and watched the movie and was like, oh no, this is actually pretty good. So I think I must've just been, cramped and having a terrible flight experience or whatever. But where do you stand on the movie version of What We Do in the Shadows? Cause I know you're a fan of the show as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a delightful movie. I actually have come to like the show more than the movie. And I think it's because of the cast. I just like the cast a little bit more of the show, but the movie is wonderful. It's funny. It's really clever. It's a good parody because it clearly has affection for what it's parodying. And that's like the secret, I think, to a good parody. You have to actually care about what you're making fun of to make it work. You have to actually have some sort of like reverence for it. And that I think is really why it works so well. It understands other vampire movies and what makes them work. And that's why I think it works so well.
Yeah, that reverence is a huge thing. And Brad and I were talking on a podcast earlier this week about like the resurrection of the scary movie franchise and sort of like that glut of parody and spoof movies that we got in like the 2000s and into the 2010s. and how they basically like kind of eventually began to shy away from parodying and spoofing an individual thing and just started incorporating like random nonsense from pop culture in there. Yeah. And that's where I feel like those movies really lost their way, is because it went away from that reverence that you're talking about and just started like trying to flail and grab at anything that people recognize, instead of the specificity is where the humor is in that stuff. And I think like Mel Brooks knew that really well with like Young Frankenstein and stuff like that. Like the adherence to the visual style and the tone and in some ways of those original projects is really what makes those parody, the best parody movies really sing, I think. So
yeah,
that's a great point. All right, let's take a break and then we'll be right back to finish out our lists.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, you're number two, Chris.
My number two is Neil Jordan's adaptation of Interview with the Vampire, which I just love this movie.
I've never Tom seen this one.
It's, you never seen that. Tom Cruise is so good in this. It's like one of my favorite Tom Cruise performances, where he plays Lestat, the vampire, and he's really going for it, man. Brad Pitt is kind of phoning it in. You get the sense that Brad Pitt does not really like this material, or he's uncomfortable with the material. But Tom Cruise, he's just going for it as this really bratty, annoying vampire guy who ruins everyone's lives, and it's a great adaptation. It's better than the book. I read most of Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicle books, and I don't want to upset people who love those books, but they're not very good. They're kind of you know credit to Anne Rice. Anne Rice essentially invented the modern romantic vampire as we know it. Like, that's really because of Anne Rice. So all credit to Anne Rice for that. But the books are not very good, and they get progressively worse as they go along. But this is a really solid adaptation that like understands what works in the book and brings it to the screen really well. And it's great. It's just a wonderful movie. It's gothic. It's very gay. It's a very gay movie. I really recommend this. If you haven't seen this, man, I really recommend checking it out.
Yeah, I remember hearing that Kirsten Dunst was great in this.
She's phenomenal. She's
really young in this too, right?
I think this is like her, I want to say this is like her feature debut. Like, this is her first movie, and she plays a child vampire. And like, so she's like, she gets older, but she's trapped in the body of a child. And that's like and she plays that so well. She's really good in this.
Man, yeah, that's such a horrifying concept, and another way that the vampire subgenre can be stretched, and you know, another part of that flexibility you were talking about. Like, there's so many different ways you can go about, different ways into this subgenre, and like different horrors to explore, I guess, if you want to call it that. And that's another one that that has been played with some. But I always find that concept so compelling, like the just the sheer horror, the terror of the situational aspect of being locked into the same age and like what that does. And another movie that I actually have not seen, but I'm guessing you have, tackles that, I think, is Only Lovers Left Alive, which is the what was that? Jim Jarmusch, Tom Hiddleston, Tilda Swinton movie from 2013 ish. I missed that one, and I've heard good things about it, but it's been on my list of things to see for a long time. But what do you think about that movie? I know it's not like officially on our ranking here, but just a side tangent. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, that's a great movie too. It's a very cool movie. They're very cool vampires in that movie. But yeah, I dug that movie a lot.
Okay. So my number two is From Dusk Till Dawn, which is Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino teaming up to make their version of a vampire movie, which starts out as just sort of like a modern crime film and like a road movie almost, and eventually ends up at this bar that turns out to be sort of a secret haven for vampires. And I just remember, once again, the concept of that just being like so cool to me in, you know, when I was 15 in the year 2000 or whatever, thinking about like just how rad that idea is. And like Selma Hayek was in it, and that was like one of the big selling points for me as a teenager, obviously. But like you've got Brad Pitt and Tarantino themselves, or Tarantino himself, like playing brothers in this movie. These characters are like really awful, but you're kind of with them to some degree. And then you're kind of like, by the time they get into that vampire bar, I, as a viewer, remember just like rooting for as much chaos to ensue as possible. I kind of like lost my allegiance to the characters or the protagonists of the movie, and just was like, it's almost like sometimes when I watch a football game and I don't really care about the teams involved, I just want like the most explosive offensive plays possible, just so I'm like, my jaw is on the floor. That's kind of how I felt watching From Dusk Till Dawn. I just like hoped the most ridiculous things possible could happen, and certainly Rodriguez and Tarantino lived up to that for me. So
it's also crazy that that's like George Clooney's first real movie role is like From Dusk Till Dawn.
Like, was like, it really?
Like, yeah, he had been on ER. ER made turn like he had been working before ER, obviously, but ER is what made him a star. And then he sort of graduated to movies with From Dusk Till Dawn, and then followed it up with I think it's like The Peacemaker.
Oh, yeah,
like but From Dusk Till Dawn came first. That's like his, I don't want to say it's his first movie, but I think it's his first like starring movie role, which is just like insane to think about. Like, that's where George Clooney got his start. ER, yeah, like, and then the vampire stripper movie is where
he started. Yeah, it's so like unlike the rest of his filmography. He's never really made stuff that's kind of in that same tone or with that same kind of playfulness before. Like, obviously, like the Ocean's movies have plenty of playfulness to them, and he's kind of, I feel like he's kind of a playful, charismatic movie star, but like the insane violence and the really like over the top nature, it feels like he doesn't really make movies that are that over the top. So for him to start out that way is really fascinating. Okay, let's get to your number one, Chris. What's your favorite vampire movie?
My favorite vampire movie is Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is just a balls to the wall, incredibly crazy, over the top, gorgeous, gothic, sexy, bloody, all the adjectives. I can just keep going. It's an insane movie, and I love Bram Stoker's Dracula. I love the way it looks. I love the cast. I love all the special effects in that movie are done in camera. They're done all practically, which I think it's like one of the last like Hollywood movies to do that. Honestly, with it. There's no digital trickery. It's all like magic tricks, basically, used to bring this to life. And I love Bram Stoker's Dracula. I could never get sick of watching Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like, I could watch it right now, honestly.
Yeah, that's awesome. I need to watch this. Like, I'm going to try to dial this up once October and spooky season rolls around, because I think I saw this one time and just remember being like blown away by the aesthetics of it and thinking that like, Gary Oldman and Keanu Reeves were like a little ridiculous in the movie, but I think I saw it when I was like 13 or 14 or something. So I don't think I appreciated it back then the way that I probably would now on rewatch. So I definitely need to cycle this one back into my rotation this horror season. But okay, my number one is 2008's Let the Right One In, which is Tomas Alfredson is the director. And it's another movie that kind of gets, it taps into the guess some of the inherent terror in the vampire story. Like, it's another story about a very young vampire, or a person who is like, I guess, presenting as a young child, basically, but who is a vampire who's been around for a long, long time and is kind of trapped in this body and is making friends with this young boy who's bullied and moves into the basically the same apartment complex that the vampire and her caregiver live in the early 1980s. It's just a tremendous movie. It's like it's a Swedish film, but like, man, it is so beautifully shot. And there's a scene at the pool at the very end that is like the most incredible, evocative, violent, gory, like, just beautiful way to, like, if you're talking about blocking and staging as a director, you know, somebody who envisions a scene, and the famous phrase is like, you can give the same script to 50 different people and you'll see something, you'll see 50 different results, basically, from different filmmakers with their own eyes and experiences, you know, I guess being brought to bear on filming something. And the way that Alfredson chose to film that scene where the camera stays underwater with the main kid the whole time, and you just see body parts start dropping in the swimming pool, it's just like stayed with me ever since I saw this movie. And it's just a really, really beautiful, kind of like heart aching, like yearning love story that also happens to be an incredible vampire movie. So I really love this one. What do you think about Let the Right One In?
Yeah, I saw this when it came out in the theater, and it blew me away. It's all you've said and more. And it's also like really, I don't want to give away the ending if someone hasn't seen it, but it has this really like ending that's both somehow sweet and also bleak as hell when you like stop and think about it. So it's an incredible movie that they keep remaking for some reason over and over again. Like, just leave it alone. We have the original.
Yeah, there's like a cyclical nature to the storytelling that seems to be like repeated by Hollywood's constant like mining it as a piece of IP. Like Matt Reeves made it in as a movie in 2010 called Let Me In, which I think is actually pretty good. I mean, it's very, very similar to the original movie, and it was at the time, it just struck me as like, okay, this is the Americanized version because Americans won't watch international films that have subtitles. And I feel like we've changed a little bit societally in the years since. So like, if this movie came out originally now, like maybe it would have a better chance of becoming more of a mainstream hit or something, instead of like the cult kind of success that it was at the time. I totally forgot, since you said that they've remade it again as a TV show. Was it on Showtime or something like that? I think
it got canceled too, because enough, we don't need it.
Go back and check out that movie if you haven't seen it. It's incredible. All right, I think we did a pretty good job here, Chris. I have to say though, there are several like really high profile vampire movies that I've never seen that I wanted to run through with you real quick and just get your like gut check response to these. So I'm just going to read through these. Let's see. Todd Browning's Dracula. That's the one from 1931, I think it is.
Yes.
I've seen several of the original Universal horror movies, and I don't think I've ever seen this Dracula all the way through. So once again, this is one that I'm going to try to rectify, once this October rolls around, it's more like thematically appropriate for me. But what's your take on that original Dracula?
You know, it's an important movie. It's the movie that pretty much saved Universal Studios at the time, like during the Depression. It helped kick off their monster movies, so important movie, all that stuff. Bela Lugosi, iconic. It's a little stiff. It's directed kind of stiffly. Interestingly enough, there at the same time, Universal made a Spanish language version using the same sets and a new cast. And what they would do is, during the day, they would shoot the English language Dracula, and then at night, the English crew would go home, and the Spanish language crew would come in and shoot on the same sets. And even though Bela Lugosi is the better Dracula, the movie, the Spanish language one, is shot better. It has better cinematography. So it's like, I always wished I could take Lugosi's performance and put it in the Spanish language one, and then you'd have like the perfect movie.
Well, with AI, Chris, you know, everything's possible.
Thank you, AI. Let someone get on that right now.
Okay, so there's that one. I've never seen Tony Scott's The Hunger, which is a vampire film, as far as I can tell. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I have. It's really cool. It's a cool movie.
I love Tony Scott as a director, so I'm going to have to check that one out for sure. All right. How about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie? Have you ever seen that?
I have seen the movie. It's okay. I loved the show, actually. I was a big fan of the show. The movie is just okay.
Okay. And then what about the Underworld movies? I've never seen any of those. Did you? I mean, those started in like the early 2000s. Were you like on board the Underworld train as that was pulling out of the station?
I definitely saw the first one in theaters when it came out. I don't think I saw... I haven't seen all the sequels. I think I saw the second one. I don't know. There's like seven of those movies. It's like an insane amount of those movies. They just kept making them. But I remember when the first one came out, it was like a big, because it was like, it looks like The Matrix, but it's about vampires and werewolves. It's like, hell yeah, I gotta see that.
Do you remember being a fan of that first one?
I don't remember like coming out of theater and being like, that sucked. I think I was just like, that was fine. You know, yeah. It was okay for what it was.
How about Park Chan-wook's Thirst? I never got around to seeing this one either.
That movie is wonderful. That is a crazy, sexy movie. I really recommend that.
Okay. And then a couple more here. A Girl Walks Home at Night. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night from Anna Lily Amirpour from 2014. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, that's a very good movie too. Yeah, that's a really nice, like, sort of twist on the genre. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Okay. And then the last big one here, I think it's widely considered to be a modern classic that I've just never seen. And it's called Morbius. Did you ever see? I'm joking. I'm guessing you didn't actually see Morbius.
I wish one of us had put Morbius on our. I have seen Morbius actually.
Oh, you saw it? Okay.
I think I reviewed it. I can't remember if I reviewed it or not, but I know I saw it in the theater and I was like, it's Morbin time.
All right. So there are four other things I want to mention real quick. The Monster Squad. Did you ever grow up watching that one?
I love the Monster Squad. Monster Squad has like one of my favorite versions of Dracula in it. Dracula is such like a scumbag in that movie. He's got like slick back hair and he blows up a treehouse with dynamite. He's just like a petty like asshole. Like Dracula, what are you doing?
Yeah, that movie is awesome. Really, really underrated. So check out the Monster Squad because it's another one that like involves a bunch of different sort of classic horror villain characters or monster characters. So if you've never seen that one, certainly seek it out. What about The Lost Boys? That one is like so stylish, and I mean there's like the sexy sax man and all of that. Like it feels like that movie has become this sort of like larger than life experience, and it just feels like even just saying the name, like there's just like torches somehow have lit up around me in this room. You know, it just kind of has that like larger than life experience to it. What do you think about The Lost Boys as a movie?
Yeah, I dig The Lost Boys. I mean, it's very 80s. It's very Joel Schumacher. And those aren't bad things. Those can be good things. And it's got a great vibe to it. It's a great vibe movie. I really dig The Lost Boys. I don't think it's like a great movie, but it's fun. It's a fun vampire movie. And Kiefer Sutherland is a lot of fun in that movie as the bad vampire with his perm or whatever he has.
All right, two more. What do you think about the Blade films?
I dig the Blade films. First one, great. Second one, even better. I know the third one that like killed the franchise, but I even kind of like the third one when I saw it. I haven't seen it in decades, so it probably does not hold up, but I like those movies.
All right. Last one is Kronos from Guillermo del Toro. I remember seeing this movie. I mean, once again, I was probably like 15 or 16, just like at that point, barely understanding who del Toro was and like realizing like, okay, this guy seems like he's going to be an important force in movie making. So I want to try to catch up with his work. And I must have watched the movie like really late at night or something because I don't really have much of a memory of it. But what do you think about Kronos?
It's a great movie. It's not my favorite del Toro, but it's a really strong, interesting like vampire. It's like it's really not your traditional vampire movie at all. So if you're going in expecting that, you'll be like, "What the hell am I watching?" But it's really neat. It's a great movie.
Okay, well, I think, you know, I guess with the stuff that we actually put on our list and then those movies that we just talked about rapid fire there at the end, I feel like we covered a lot of like the main like major vampire movies of this past century.
We didn't talk about Dracula 2000, Ben. What about Dracula 2000?
I get that confused with Dracula Dead and Loving It. is Dracula 2000 the one with Gerard Butler?
Yes, Dracula 2000 is the Gerard Butler Dracula with an amazing twist. I guess I won't give it away, Ben, if you haven't seen it. But
I haven't. Okay, there's a twist involved.
It's the most amazing Dracula twist you will ever see in a Dracula movie. You'll be like, what the hell is this? It'll blow your mind.
All right. Well, now that you say that, I'm glad you said that, because now I'm going to put it on my list of things to see. Yes. I was not planning on having a Dracula 2000 conversation today, but here we are.
It's on Max right now, streaming. So if you want to watch it, there's your chance.
All right. There's my night laid out for me. okay. Well, I think that'll do it. But I would love to know from our listeners if there are any hidden gems or just vampire movies that they love. If you're listening to this and we didn't talk about something or didn't talk about it, to your satisfaction, if you feel like something should be ranked higher or whatever, let us know. I would love that. bpearson@slashfilm.com is the email address where you can reach us. And I'll try to read some of those responses maybe on the air tomorrow. I think BJ and I are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about Abigail, and we're going to play an interview that she did with Radio Silence, the directing team behind that movie. So look forward to that. You can find much more about most of these vampire movies that we talked about on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a ton. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.